Dr. George Dimitri, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Hello and welcome to Five Things. I'm James Brown. It's Sunday, February 26th, 2023. Every week we take an idea and go deep. And this week we're headed into the mind of dogs and other animals. For the first time in my life, I'm living with a dog. Meet Eddie. He's a mutt, most likely a shih tzu, and a bunch of other things.
We're gonna go. Let's go out. Eddie, let's go out.
He's a small dog, a white fur ball with some streaks of brown hair. After he's been alone for a bit, he gets so excited to see us that his feet lose traction. It's like he's skating. Sometimes he climbs up my leg and tries to make eye contact with me afterward. This was a subject that my colleague Claire Mulroy looked into. I take it you're a pet person.
I am. You know, the pictures in this story are actually of my dog. I really campaigned for that because my dog has the best smile in the world. So I really needed the world to see it.
Well, that's one of the things that I wanted to ask about. So before you researched this topic, you believed that your dog smiled?
Yeah, you know, ever since we've had her for, I think, 11 years almost, and ever since we got her, she does this kind of no-teeth smile where she brings her the corners of her mouth up, and it's pretty indistinguishable. So for me, it was, I just really wanted to find out what she was trying to tell us. I always kind of assumed it was the equivalent of a human smile, but I really wanted to dig in more and find out what exactly it was and if it was actually smiling that she was doing.
What did you find out? Is the smile a display of emotion, or is it, you know, a happenstance? What did you find out when you looked into it?
It's a sign of active submission. It's basically the dog's giving you this appeasement greeting behavior. But what's particularly interesting about this is that it's only directed at people. It's not directed at other dogs. It might be accompanied with other greeting behavior, like, you know, approaching their owners, wagging their tails, maybe even some whining. And it's really, you know, showing that appeasement greeting behavior to your owner.
Does it look like a human smile?
It could. It could be, you know, humans, we smile with our teeth, without, and dogs do the same. There's some dogs that may never smile with their teeth, and there's some dogs that do smile.
What was the response like? Did you hear from people whose other dogs smile?
I was kind of patrolling the Instagram comments because it was posted on Instagram yesterday, and seeing some people comment, you know, I always thought my dog was smiling. I had a hunch that that's what it was, but I wasn't sure if, you know, there was an actual reason behind it. I wasn't sure if they were actually smiling. So it's nice to hear that people have been, you know, observing this such cute behavior from their dogs, and now they can actually, you know, have a definite answer that yes, their dogs are smiling.
Smiling isn't the only way that dogs express emotions. Dr. Laura Haug has been working with and counseling animals since the 1980s. She's a board-certified veterinary behavioralist, or in other words, an animal therapist. At any one time, her office in the Sugar Land, Texas area is tracking hundreds of animals. She's seen a lot. Laura Haug, welcome to Five Things.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am doing well also.
And I understand we have a dog with us now.
We actually have two dogs in our office today.
What are their names?
One of them is named Sunny. She is a pit bull mix. And the other dog's name is Charlie, and she is a German Shepherd.
You know, I would think to be an animal counselor or psychiatrist or psychologist, you have to be pretty talented and you could have done a lot of other different things. Why settle on this discipline?
I've just been interested in animals since I was a little kid. I find medicine fascinating. I find behavior fascinating. And so it was kind of a natural progression for me to blend veterinary medicine and animal behavior together so that I can take care of both their mind and their body.
What are your toughest cases like?
There are a variety. I mean, obviously dogs that have, or any kind of animal, we don't work just with dogs, but animals that have disorders that involve self-injury, like they chew on their body parts or they're having panic behavior so severe that they might jump through a second story plate glass window to try to get out of the house or get away from a storm. Those are obviously really disturbing. And then cases where there's a lot of behavioral pathology, you know, animals that really probably have abnormal brain development where they're showing aggression, maybe even to their own family members. And sometimes those cases are quite severe and it's very emotionally traumatizing for the animal and the people.
A dog jumping out a window because they're afraid? Are they anxious? Where does that come from?
It's a panic behavior. You know, we've all heard about people maybe that have panic attacks or people that get in scary situations and they just panic. Or in an animal's case, you know, it's survival. Like if they're so terrified about, say, a thunderstorm and they're just running anywhere thinking they can get away from the storm and they're like running anywhere and the house isn't working, maybe I just need to get out of the house. And they will sometimes chew through the wall or, like I said, go through windows. And they're, you know, serious cases because obviously they can get hurt.
How dense is the field of research on this? How long have people been trying to figure out about animal emotions?
I would say it's become really a much more prominent field in the last 10 years. You know, for many decades in the past, you know, we didn't even accept that animals could feel pain. And obviously, fortunately, we know better than that now. But I would say there's a lot of people looking into animal cognition and higher level thought, if you will, and emotions a lot, like I said, in the last 10 years.
Wow. We didn't believe that animals could feel pain.
Yes. I mean, for a long time in the past, nobody believed infants felt pain either, which is why they did things to them without pain medicine.
Wow. I did not know. That's really scary. I'm living with a dog for the first time in my life. It's clear that Eddie can retain certain things. He knows the sound of our cars. He knows which door he goes out to go to the bathroom. He knows which way his food is typically. How much can animals retain, and dogs in particular?
Quite a lot. You know, you hear about some of these border collies that have learned like over 300 different cues, or they can differentiate 100 different toys by labels. But animals are quite capable of associating environmental stimuli with things that are important in the environment. And this is a survival mechanism. Like, you need to know where the danger stuff is, and you need to know where the good stuff is, like where's the food and the water and the stuff that brings me company. So dogs are very good at making those kind of associations with their environment. And they even have some temporal associations too, because you hear about these dogs, for example, that, well, around 4:30, they go and sit at the front door or the back door because they know their owner's going to be home at 5. And that isn't so much because they read time, but they almost have kind of this internal capability of tracking time to a degree so that their brain kind of knows, hey, this is about the amount of time or the time of day when my owner usually comes home. So they're capable of a lot more than many people realize.
You've worked with lots of different types of animals. I was asked by a couple of different people if cats smile as well. Are you aware of that?
Yes. And I would say cats do. It's a little different than dogs, both in how they do it. They don't have as many facial muscles as dogs do. The expression is much more subtle, and they kind of don't smile for the same reason. Like, the dog smiling is an appeasement greeting behavior, kind of like when a person approaches, like, hi, how are you doing? Cats, when we talk about smiling, their smiling is sort of like just at a representation of how they feel at that moment. Like, oh, that cat again looks happy. Look at that smile on his face. But they don't specifically smile as a greeting behavior.
Are there other animals that smile?
I am not aware of other animals that smile in the way that dogs do. And I think, again, that's partly because the dog smile, as I mentioned in the article, is a specifically people-directed behavior. Like, they don't smile. They don't do that appeasement smile to other dogs, not in the same way they do to people. And dogs are really the only animals that evolved to cohabitate specifically with humans. Like, we have other domesticated animals, but dogs actually evolved with people. And that is partly what makes them very special in how they bond and behave around us.
Any famous last words?
I will just say that there's a lot of patients or pets that need help. And if you think your pet's having any kind of distress or anxiety, get professional help. So talk to your veterinarian, get a referral to a qualified professional. There is no regulatory body for dog trainers or animal trainers, but there are regulatory bodies for veterinary professionals. So there's a lot of really good professional assistance out there, but there's also still a lot of people that are providing services that are not appropriate.
Laura Haug, thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.
Thanks to Claire Mulroy, Laura Haug, and of course, Eddie the dog for joining me. And to Shannon Ray Green and Alexis Gustin for their production assistance. Tell us what you think of the show, review us on your podcast app, and send me an email at jabrown@usatoday.com or leave me a voicemail at 585-484-0339. We might have you on the show. You can also find me anywhere online at James Brown TV. For all of us at USA Today, thanks for listening. I'm James Brown, and as always, be well.
Dr. George Dimitri, medical oncologist, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works, and then the expert clinicians that interact with patients and families every day. It's not easy to have input at a substantive level to new drugs that are safe and effective at treating cancer. So our whole mantra has always been to try to minimize risks to patients and yet try to maximize the opportunity of finding how effective a new treatment could be. And that means understanding cancer really, really deeply.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.